Well, today I'm going to unfold a great mystery to you, a question that I've been asked many times, and that is this: why in the world did Bianca marry you? That is the question I get asked a lot. And it's not obvious to the naked eye, I understand that, but the overwhelming reason is this, you need to know this. The reason why she married me is because I make her laugh. I am a very funny guy. I don't know if y'all knew this. As a matter of fact, somebody, I don't know who, but somebody in our church labeled me a goober last week. And that, of course, is a compliment, as we all know. And if it's not a compliment, please let me live under that delusion, because I really couldn't stand it if it's not. And so, being a funny guy, I get humor. I understand it. Some people don't get it quite as well as I do. And so, sometimes there are problems. For instance, I was at a meeting a few years ago with the person who at that time was my closest friend. His name's Les. We were meeting. We didn't live in the same city, but we worked for RUF, the same ministry, and we would meet together two or three times a year. And we were at one of those, and so we were saying goodbye, and I didn't have time to. He was walking in. I was walking out. I just kind of waved to him, and I said this. I said, "Bye, Les. I never really liked you," and walked. And isn't that funny? That's a funny thing to say. Let me explain. Y'all are not laughing. See, that's humorous. The reason why that's humorous is this. The key to humor is you take people the opposite direction of what they expect. You see? That's the key. So when you say that, you weren't expecting me to say that, were you? And so he wasn't expecting me to say it, and that makes it funny. Also, it's obvious. You would never tell somebody that you're actually in a relationship, something like that, so baldly, right? I mean, it was clear that I was teasing, right? So it was funny. That's funny, people. Y'all don't know humor. You know what's not funny? It is not funny to hurt the feelings of your closest friend. It is not funny to bruise somebody's conscience and then not even see them and know that you've done it for weeks. That's not funny. And I did that on that day. You see, I intended to love him, but I didn't follow the rules of love. We all do that from time to time. Everybody's got their own rules. And it's not only important that you intend to love somebody, it's important that you follow their rules for what it means to love them. You know this if you've ever been married. The worst piece of advice you can ever give somebody when they get married is follow the golden rule. Just do what you'd have them do to you. That's terrible advice. You know what I want people to do for me when I've had a terrible day? Leave me alone. I mean, if Bianca wants to just love me wonderfully, perfectly, if I've had a terrible day, she should just leave me alone, fix dinner, and offer me a little intimacy later. That's all I want. So when she's had a terrible day, I do that. I ignore her. She doesn't want anybody to talk to, right? No, it doesn't work that well. Ignoring her and then expecting intimacy later, that doesn't work out that great. Shocking. I'm following the golden rule, but I'm not following her rules for what it means to love her. That's a problem in marriages. That's a problem in churches. A friend of mine had his session give him an anonymous performance review. A bad idea if ever there was one. And so they anonymously kind of wrote down what they thought of him. Duh, that's dumb. And one of them wrote down, Philip is the least self-aware person I've ever known. For 2 years, Philip is upset about this. What do I do that shows such terrible self-awareness? Am I hurting people's feelings? Am I stepping on people's toes? What am I doing? His conscience is bruised. 2 years later, he's working with one of his elders on a project, and his elder stops him and says, "You know, this is what I love about you, Philip. You're just not self-aware. You're just always thinking about other people. You're never thinking about yourself." The guy thought it was a compliment. What he meant to say was, "You're not selfish." But he said, "You're not self-aware." He meant it to be a compliment. My friend took it as an insult. It hurt him. He wasn't following the rules of what it means to love him. We do that in the church. We do it in our relationships. We do it culturally. Sometimes it's just a problem. We're flummoxed. I get asked maybe once a month at least, how do I love somebody who's homosexual? How do I show them love? What's the rules there? You get asked that kind of question all the time. How do I love someone when I don't approve of their lifestyle, when I think the Bible condemns their lifestyle? How? How do I do that? Those are hard questions. And what the Bible teaches us is that we need two things. We need the intention to love, and we need the rules of love. Think of it like a train and a track. The track is the rules. This is how you love somebody. But it's the intention, the desire to love, that pushes the train down the tracks. You've got to have both. A lot of strong intention to love somebody, but if I don't understand you, if I don't know what that means, that's a train without a track. It leads to train wreck. Having strong rules in place, but no real desire to love somebody, that just gives us a track with no train. No love is ever delivered. We've got to have both. And God tells us that that's why He gave us His law. The purpose of God's law is to show us how to love each other. The purpose of God's law is to show us how to love each other, because love is as love does. Love is as love does. Please stand as we read Romans chapter 13. This is just a great text. I really hope you love it the way I have. Begin with verse 8, a short text, verses 8 through 10. Owe no one anything except to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment, they're summed up in this word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Please be seated. Love is as love does. Whenever the Bible calls us to love, we're always called back to the example of how God has loved us. 1 John chapter 4 says, this is what love is. God loved us and He gave us His only begotten Son. God is love. This is how we know what love is. And so we always going to go back to that example. Think of the first Bible verse you probably learned, right? John 3:16. God so loved the world. The intention, the train engine, it's there. He loves the world. So what does He do? He gives us what nobody asked for. None of us would have ever asked, would you give me your son? Would you mind crucifying your son for me? He gave us His son to fulfill the law for us, to keep the law perfectly, and to undergo all the curse of the law for us. He had the intention to love, and He knew the requirements of love. And He did both of them for us, to fulfill us, to complete us. That's what love is. That's what God has done for us. He had the passion, and He had the action. And then after redemption, and this is the number one thing that's misunderstood by every Christian, and you're going to forget it tomorrow morning, okay? You have to remind yourself of this every day. After He rescues His people from their slavery and their bondage, after He rescues people from their sin, He gives them the law. The law is not how we earn our rescue. The law is not how we save ourselves. The law is how we live after we've been redeemed. It is how we love God and love each other. That's what the law is. That's why Jesus said to us, if you love me, keep my commandments. Right? That's not Him being some kind of diva. We kind of have this view of Jesus like He's, you know, this diva always trying to make us earn His love, and He's whining to us, you know, if you love me, give me a diamond studded tiara. If you love me, prove it. Really? You think that's, I mean, is that what He's like? Did He come to us and say, prove His love? He loved us long before we knew Him. He loved us first. He gave himself for us first. He's not asking us to prove his love. What's he saying? If you love me, this is how you love me. If you love me, do this. Why? Because this is how you love me. Again, to go back to marriage as an example. Oftentimes couples will have this problem. They're trying to love each other the way they understand it, and it's not the way the other person understands it. Tim Keller uses this example in his book. He talks about when he grew up, it was a very, quote-unquote, traditional family. His mom did all the household errands her way. She didn't want any help. If you helped, you weren't going to do it right. Right? You weren't going to put things in the right place. So don't help her. Let her do it. And his dad did all the, made the money and came in, and it was kind of a very separate life. His wife, Kathy, grew up in a family that was much more teamwork-oriented. Everybody helped all the time. Mom didn't put clothes away. She might fold the clothes, but she would leave them laying for you to put away. And so you can imagine the conflict that comes when this couple gets married, right? And, Tim would say, well, what time is dinner? And Kathy would say, well, what time are you going to finish fixing it? And Tim would say, well, I think the baby's crying. And Kathy would say, well, have you forgotten where the baby's room is? And they would have these arguments. And in the argument, Tim is saying in his mind, if you loved me the way my mom loved my dad, you would never ask me to do this. And Kathy is saying in her mind, if you loved me the way my dad loved my mom, you'd be helping me with this. And they're both trying to say, I love you, but one is speaking Japanese and one is speaking Spanish, and they're not getting through to each other. They're not speaking the same love language. Jesus is saying, I know you love me, but you don't know how. You just don't know how. Let me show you. This is my love language. Follow my commandments. Follow my commandments. These people that I've surrounded you with, they're my people. If you love me, you will love them. And so how do we do that? The first thing we have to do is we have to intend to love each other. I love this verse. I love it, man. Owe no one anything except to love each other. We live in a debt to each other. We owe each other our love. Isn't that great? I just love everything about it. You see, at the heart of legalism, we talk a lot about legalism in the church today, broadly and specifically. And I think the problem gets to be like this. The legalists, the people that are called legalists, they tend to think, well, people call us legalists because we care about the law. And we care about the rules. And that's not it at all. The problem with being a legalist is not that you care about the rules. The problem with being a legalist is, why do you care about the rules? At the heart of legalism is this desire to justify, to prove yourself. If I do everything right, then God will approve of me. And if God approves of me, I will approve of me. At the heart of legalism is this desire to do things right for a selfish motivation, because that's what good people do, and I'm good people. But at the heart of the gospel is love. We don't follow the rules to earn something from people, to earn God's respect. That's turning the whole thing upside down. The rules are how we love people. It's not self-motivated. It's not this desire to improve my own resume. It's this desire to love people. It's thinking of others completely. It's not thinking about yourself at all. And we go through life with this debt of love. You see, what legalism does, what self-righteousness does, is it gives you a list of things so you know exactly how much better you are than everybody else. All right, I've got this list of things that I have to do. And I did them. And so I'm here. And you are here. I keep the Sabbath. You do not. I tithe. You do not. I go to church. You do not. I read my Bible. You do not. I'm here. You are here. Do you see? You see the difference? And not only do I feel better about myself, I feel good about myself. And one of the ways that I feel good about myself is I surround myself with people like you who are not quite as good as me. So I feel even better. But the gospel is completely upside down. The gospel is, I owe you. You look like Jesus to me. Jesus gave me the world. I owe you. I'm not trying to earn your approval. I'm not trying to earn your respect. I'm not trying to earn anything from you. I owe you my love. I can't love you if I'm trying to impress you. You're aware of that, right? Because then I might have to do whatever you want me to do, and it might not even be good for you. But if I want to love you, if I just want to love you, that changes everything around. That enables me to think about you and give you what is best for you. I need you. I need to love you. I don't need you to move toward me. I need to move toward you. I don't walk into a room wondering, who likes me in this room? I don't go into a room of acquaintances and think, now wait a minute, who can I go and talk to? Who's going to be nice to me? You know, and kind of look for glimmers in everybody's eyes. Who likes me here? Instead, I walk into a room and think, who looks lonely? Who can I go and bless? I owe them my debt of love. It changes everything around. The first thing we need to do is we need to have the intention to love. We need to have the train engine. But the second thing we need to do is we need to learn how to love. We need to learn how to do it. And that is the rules. What does Paul say? He says, for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Isn't that a great way to understand the law? This is how we love you. I was at a retreat a few years ago in Texas, and it was an RUF retreat for our college ministry, and there was different schools there, and with one of the schools, I think he was from Trinity in San Antonio, a Muslim came. It was great, and he was just kind of experimenting with Christianity. He very open about the fact, I'm not a Christian. I don't think I'm going to become a Christian, but I just want to know more about what y'all believe, and I was trying to explain this concept that the only thing that matters is loving each other. And he says, but that's not all the laws. What about all the other laws? And I said, what other laws? And it was amazing to watch his face go from puzzlement to understanding to this huge smile. And he went, wait a minute. If I love you, I can't steal from you. Right. If I love you, I'm not going to commit adultery. I'm not going to steal your wife. Right. If I love you, I'm not going to say bad things about you. Right. This is how we love each other. The commandments are not an obstacle course. This is how this world was created to function. We move toward each other. We love each other. And this is how. This is the train tracks that the train runs along. And that enables us, that understanding enables us. It enables us to discipline our children. Right? Because we love our children, we give them boundaries. I love what Proverbs says. He who does not discipline his child hates his child. Because we love them, we're able to give them boundaries. We don't want them to be a slave to their appetites. We don't want them to be a slave to danger. I was in Target this past week, and there was this cute, just very sweet, bubbly girl. You know, it's one of those people I just kind of liked from the second I saw her. Which, if you're a curmudgeon like me, that's pretty rare. She was actually just dear. But she's probably 10 years old, and she was already morbidly obese. And she had a huge ice cream cone in her hand. And I just thought, I looked at her parents, and I just thought, if you loved her, you wouldn't do that. I'm not saying you don't love her, but I'm saying that giving her that is not loving her. It's not helping her. If you love somebody, you want to see them thrive. And that's what the Bible tells us. That's why the law of the Bible is important, right? That's the answer to the question of how do we love homosexuals. We love them. We're kind to them. We outdo each other in showing respect to them. We pursue peace with all men, just like the Bible commands us. And when we're asked... Again, you're not a prophet. Nobody's anointed you a prophet. No one's anointed you to go around telling everybody what you think of their lifestyle. But when you are asked, I encourage you to respond, because I love you, I want you to know, This lifestyle is not going to cause you to thrive. This is not how God designed you to work. And homosexuality is unhealthy physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Even if it feels otherwise. Even if it seems otherwise. We can't trust our feelings or the decisions of the culture of the day. God designed us, and this is how he says we're going to run. That's how we love each other. Sometimes people will want to love someone by giving them a safe place to complain. When I first moved here, there was a family in the church, and the lady would always say, "I want you to know that our house is a safe place for you to complain." That sounds so loving, doesn't it? And it feels really good when somebody complains to you, honestly, like you're on the inner ring. You know, this person trusts me. You have to be wise to be able to discern the difference between counseling somebody. And counseling somebody means hearing their story. But that's vastly different than just listening to them complain. Listening to someone complain, all that does is it builds their own bitterness. It builds their own self-righteousness. It makes them even more convinced that they are better than their husband or wife or boss or whoever they're complaining about. It just adds fuel to the fire of divisiveness within the church or whatever community it is. If you love somebody, you won't give them a safe place to complain because it's not good for them. Because it's just making them angrier and bitterer. Don't do that. The law of God gives us the train tracks that love runs down. So we have to intend to love people. We have to have the rules that show us what love looks like, and then we act in love. I love this. I just love saying love. Verse 10, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Christianity is not a list of things we don't do. Christianity is an active thing. Again, many of us still live with this false idea that I could be a great Christian and live alone in a teepee somewhere just praying and reading the Bible all the time. That's not the Christian goal. That is not, selfishness is not the Christian model. Jesus didn't stay in heaven and pray all the time. He came down to earth and was surrounded by people and gave himself to people and told us to go and serve other people. To be the complete, to fulfill the Christian model is to give yourself in love, is to love people. And that means reaching out and going forward. It means acting. It means looking to see what someone else needs that you have and going toward them. And reaching out to them. That's what love is. It is not sitting back and keeping a safe distance. It's being others aware. It's putting up your goggles and your periscope or whatever. I don't know. I'm looking for a word. Whatever does this. And looking around. And seeing needs. And loving people and moving toward people and alleviating their pain and reaching out to them in grace. Can you even imagine for a moment what it would be like to be in a community full of people who did that? To walk into a room just once a week, if you were able to just walk into a room full of people, not worried about what everybody thinks of them, not worried about how much respect everyone is showing them, but fully only interested in how they can love you. I mean, wouldn't you just run to get there? Wouldn't it be wonderful to walk into a room and not worry about what your hair looks like or worry about whether your shirt is coral or salmon or something else? But just be able to walk in and know that everyone there is intent, has the active intention of loving you. Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that be the most attractive community in the history of the world? That's what God's calling us to be. And that's what and by His grace, we're trying to become. And we are not there, man. If you're a visitor, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. We have not arrived. But I think we're getting closer. I think we're getting closer. And I think as God continues to work in us, we're going to keep getting closer. Let's pray that He will continue working in us. Father in heaven, we are so thankful for Your love, for Your grace. We are so thankful that You didn't wait until we got everything right. We are so thankful that You didn't wait on us to notice You and to ask You to act. We are so thankful that You came looking for us and that You demonstrated Your love for us while we were still sinners by giving us Your Son, a sacrifice for our sins. Father, it's hard to love other people. I can't because I'm so worried about myself. I'm worried about who loves me, who likes me, who is going to be nice to me today. Will You please, would You give us all the freedom to just walk away from that silliness? The freedom to be so convinced that Your love for us is all that we need so that we are able to love the people around us. Would You overwhelm us with that truth? And Father, would You create a community filled with people who are just looking for somebody to love today? I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.